that lass on Radio 4 who's sort of Charlotte Green? She's got nothing on me.
Do you look into their eyes, Ian, or is that too personal a question? You don't want to go into this.
What would you be shouting at the television screen, Ian Lennox?
I can't proofread that.
But there is a slight suggestion that next season might be better. So
Let's hope so.
No one seems to get a panic of pulling shirts nowadays, or hardly ever.
Or Seven Simple Seasons.
See what we did there?
Yes, like it.
Fly Me to the Moon, the audio podcast companion with Rob Nichols.
Okay, playoff final at Wembley in the 2014-15 season, promotion of the filing game in the 2015-16 season, relegation in the 2016-17 season, playoff semi-final in 2017-18, just pipped at the playoff post in 2018-19. It seems as though it's the end of the roller coaster, Rob Nichols, for this edition of Fly Me to the Moon. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. Yes, indeed. Is the season ebbing away for us? What do we think? Is that nothing to play for? Or is everything up for grabs as far as players playing for contracts?
Well, proving that we can actually just move those boundaries a wee bit further, we've got not just one, but two extra special guests for this little Fly Me to the Moon podcast. We welcome back, of course, our ace writer, Jenny Finch, now these days official Irish correspondent. How are you, Jenny?
I'm fine. It's nice to be here, Alex. Hi, Rob. Hi, George.
Hi.
Your first Fly Me to the Moon of the season, and indeed the aforementioned there, George Conway, who I only discovered this very day, Rob, when I was doing a University of Lincoln session in research methods for the benefit of the initiated, talking about George and his dissertation plans for next year, that not only is he a fantastic, keen cricket person, he's from York, but his dad was actually based in Acklam, massive Middlesbrough fan, and I think it's fair to say, George, you're also a keen Borough fan.
Absolutely. And it's an absolute privilege to be on here. I've listened to the podcast for the last sort of 3 or 4 years, and I've heard Rob's voice on the radio so many times after Borough games. So it's an absolute privilege to meet him and everyone here as well.
Brilliant. See, Rob, you've met your major fan at last. It's worked through this. We'll have the shots, etc. Rob, when last we spoke, I did actually get the prediction right. I did say it was going to be Watford 1, Middlesbrough 1. And then it all seemed to go to pot after that, really.
Yeah. No, it's been very frustrating, hasn't it? I was at the press conference this morning and Neil Warnock used that word several times. He also talked about who motivates the motivator, and he said Steve Gibson is the person that motivates him. He was at pains to say that they would not allow the season to ebb away. He's not that sort of manager, but it certainly looked in the last couple of games as if the matches have just totally got away from us, and stupid errors. I think that Warnock shares every fan's frustration at that there was really daft errors that have changed the course of some of the games. But it's not where we want to be. I don't know what you think, George, watching those games.
It's been quite frustrating, to be honest, recently. Especially with the last one against Barnsley, it was quite disappointing because I thought we were quite inconsistent from last performances. And Neil Warnock described it actually earlier in his press conference when he said he went into them three games thinking they could get 9 points, and he was very disappointed to actually only come out with one. Think we're missing out on an avid goal scorer, in my opinion. I think Akpom's yet to find his feet. He actually scored his first goal against QPR in the Championship earlier this season, but it's something that he seems like he's still adapting to, and hopefully he fights for his contract and might be able to see more of him from next season.
Mm. Yeah, so, I think so. Right, we're going to have to. Sorry, Alex. We're definitely. That's been a massive. It's been a massive problem for us for years. But this season, that the fact that we couldn't score any goals was just has been such. Has made all the difference. And the fact that our top scorer from last season, Ashley Fletcher, has missed the most of the season through injury. And now, of course, he's on a free at the end of the season, and it's looking more and more like he will be going, as will Britton Sombalonga, whose wages we frankly can't afford. And you just feel that when a club that plays in a different manner with with Britt at the helm, he might score a lot of goals next season. It might be that he prefers a different system to the. And we've had a lot of managers that have managed Britt, and if that happens, it'll be like maybe an indictment for all of them. Because do you build a team around a goal scorer? Is he that vital, or does the goal scorer have to fit in it? Are there any analogies on a rugby pitch, Jenny, to whether a key player where you would build the whole team around them, you know?
Absolutely, yes. If you look at some of the controversies in rugby recently, it's what they call rugby ping pong, constantly kicking the ball away, which the English do incredibly well. But if you haven't got the ball, you can't score. It's a defensive thing. And I think you only have to look at Middlesbrough's record where they've got an equal number of lost and won, but they've got 9 drawn matches. Now, each of those matches, one goal would have done it. If they'd have built it around a goal scorer, they could have at least another four wins, and they'd be just up where Barnsley are now.
In the words of Stanis Stan, clearly I am not quite sure whether watching a video of a player on YouTube quite cuts it for me. Is this an indictment, Rob? Is this an indictment of the Bury recruitment policy that, you know, and also, of course, Lewis Wing, who's been doing wonders for Rotherham?
Yeah, well, obviously, one of the benefits of sending a player out on loan is if he rediscovers his feet and plays a lot of games, and then you can bring him back and maybe we will bring him back next season, which would be great if that's the situation. He's a local lad. He's got a lot of talent. He does score goals from midfield. He hasn't scored that many this season, but he does take a shot, and he's got a lot of vision. It's as far as the sort of video recruitment, that was one of the real problems going into this season, is that we, because of lockdown, we couldn't, to be fair to the recruitment team, they couldn't actually go and see games, and they're still restricted now, particularly being unable to go to European games. So to an extent, you're going to take more of a gamble. I think the way they like to do it is they'll narrow down the field to the sort of players. They'll talk to Neil Warnock and see what sort of players that we want, where we want them on the pitch. We want goal scorers. We might need defenders as well. We might need a keeper. We'll probably come to that, but then they'll narrow down to certain sorts of players, the sort of style of players that to fit into a team. But normally, Neil Warnock and his assistants would actually go and want to watch that player in the flesh. The scouts would go and watch them, but they would go and watch them themselves. But that's going to only be possible within this country. They're not going to be able to go to Europe. And it's been restricted that as well, even within Britain. They won't have been able to take in as many matches as usual. So it does bring an extra difficulty. And the other difficulty is, of course, finance, without a doubt. We haven't got any. But then again, maybe nobody's got any in the Championship, apart from probably the 3 teams that come down that have got parachute payments, and any teams that have still got some parachute payments from, you know, left over, they're going to have a massive advantage. And that's the way it's shaping up, isn't it? You look at the teams that are at the top of the division, the teams that have got that extra money. And it's also shaping up that way in the Premier League. It could still, you know, two of the 3 that have gone up could still be the two going down. It's just Leeds that have made that bridge. And they're a club with more resources, aren't they? Always, potentially.
In what strange version of reality could we honestly say that Middlesbrough and Lincoln City could be playing in the same league next season? I would never have thought that. And it's still an outside bet as far as Lincoln making it up, presumably via the playoffs. But let's turn once again to George. I mean, what are your thoughts? I mean, as somebody's born in York and obviously has connections there, but clearly passionate Borough fan, etc. Middlesbrough heading down to Sinsel Bank. Is that a mouth-watering prospect?
At the moment, yeah, I think it is. I think it's quite realistic. Looking at how Lincoln City are playing, they're going really strong. They've got avid goal scorers to go forward with Morgan Roberts and Vernon Johnson, who's on loan from Forest. He could be a real pain and a thorn in many Championship team sides next season if he gets the chance at Forest and doesn't end up like Tyler Walker going to Coventry, where he's not really sort of managed to get on the sheet too much like he did for Lincoln City. But yeah, I think it's a huge possibility. Obviously, as a Borough fan, we want to see us pushing for the playoffs, maybe even reaching the promised land of the Premier League. But I don't think that that's going to be a reality this season, unfortunately. But I think a visit of Lincoln could well be on the cards. And I think with the way Mark Clapton's shaping his team down there, it could be a real, real test for us.
You can see, Robert, the whole sort of essence here. We could actually have a scout in George that could actually sort some of those striking problems out. I mean, I just roll that out for your possibility. You know, Vernon Johnson, for instance.
Yeah, an East Midlands scout. We need it. Yeah.
There you go. To the Moon and Back is, of course, an epic little centre spread in this current edition of Fly Me to the Moon, issue 615, by the way. Of course, Ken Stockhill set himself up with a mammoth task, Rob. So why did you decide to celebrate this man of a mission of actually reading all 614 issues of Fly Me to the Moon, cover to cover?
I'm very impressed. It's amazing. I can't even find all 614 issues, but he's not only found them all, but he's read them all. Because a year ago, so many of us thought, we didn't expect to be still here in a year's time, obviously, but in the sense of in our sort of lockdown era. But we often set ourselves some sort of task. What can we do with it in these few weeks? And Ken started something, and he started it, and he decided he was going to finish it, and he's got through the whole lot. I've known Ken for years because he's a bit like you, George. I mean, you're coming out of York, and Ken's from Scarborough, so there's never truly a home game for him. I mean, he's got to get on the bus and come to Middlesbrough, or he gets on the bus from Scarborough and joins trains and things. I would see him at York Station, making a change or whatever. And he gets all over the country. I've known him, as a Borough fan in Britain and in Europe. When he just told me, he just texted me last week and said, I've read them all. I thought, really? Because he told me he was starting. I thought, no, he's not going to do it. He's going to, but he did. So I asked him a few questions about his time watching Borough and things that he could pick out from the fanzines. I don't think he got issue number one, actually. I think he started at number two, but I'll let him off.
I think we can allow a certain amount of leeway there, because George actually revealed before. George revealed before the show that he's actually managed to track down programmes from 1974, Rob. 1974 Borough programmes, thanks to his dad, etc. So, Rob, do you want to just quiz George on his Borough fan credentials?
Yeah. Well, I'm actually broadcasting my bit from Ayrton Park, George. So, and this goes back from before your time, but 1974 we were playing at Ayrton Park and Jack Charlton was the manager. So I'm sure you've heard tell from your dad some of the great players from that era. Do you know any of the players that from the 70s or the 80s?
Good. It sort of takes me back, really, because I heard a lot of stuff. I'll say my dad told me a lot of stories. I've actually visited Ayrton Park, not as the stadium itself, but we've driven down where it used to be, and it's amazing that them big red gates could fit down on the end of the streets. As far as my player knowledge from the 70s and 80s goes, it's a little hazy. most of my knowledge, most of the stories and of my dad stood in the whole gate end, watching the action unfold and going with his dad, who sadly passed away over 10 years ago now. And it was, it was amazing. I mean, he remembers his first game there, and I remember the first game he ever took me to, which was, I was very, very young.
Yeah.
I was born in 1997, and he took me to the semi-final of, I think it was the FA Cup, when we played Arsenal at Old Trafford.
Oh, right. Yes. So So your first game is a really big game, and it's at a neutral ground.
Yeah. I don't remember much of it, sadly, but my fondest memories. Yeah, I'm glad I didn't remember that as my first game, because my first game that really sticks in my head for me was the when my dad took me to again at the Riverside when we beat Steaua Bucharest in the semi final of the Europa League.
Oh, the UEFA Cup, yes.
And Massimo Macaroni.
You only went to the big games, didn't you?
Yeah.
Or maybe the big games were being set up for George. Maybe we need more George Conway visits to actually get those big games back again.
That is true. That's one way of looking at it.
Believe me, it's not. I had a season ticket for 9 years. The first season I got it, we got relegated. Spent a whole lot of time in the Championship. And then the first season I decided to not go, even though I had a season ticket, because I took up other responsibilities with cricket. We got promoted.
Right, I've changed my mind about that, Alex.
I can see, George, why you're doing your dissertation on cricket and the pandemic effect on cricket now. It's an important line of things from that point of view. Jenny, are you set to actually cast your critical ear over Rob and myself doing a version of the epic, and it can only be described as an epic, Jimmy Flynn tribute to Captain Marvel in the current edition of Fly Me to the Moon, of course, issue 615. Are you ready for this, Jenny?
I'm ready.
Rob, are you ready?
No, I am okay. Now.
I think we're sorted out. We're on. If you wish to actually play at home, it's the Frank Worthington RIP tribute on pages 10 and 11. So let's head off then into this Jimmy Flynn tribute to Captain Marvel. Over to you, Rob.
Brian Robson was a footballer of a special kind, a player teammates and fans lined up behind.
A Geordie lad from Chesterley Street who had the world of football at his feet.
At West Bromwich Albion, he learnt his trade, then a career-changing move to Manchester United made.
Overcoming setbacks and serious injury, he joined the Red Devils for a record transfer fee.
At Old Trafford, he made his name and in an England shirt achieved worldwide fame.
A tireless, all-action, box-to-box midfielder, a natural-born, multi-talented, inspirational leader.
An exhilarating, combative, competitive firebrand. 65 times he wore the England captain's armband.
Captain Marvel, the most famous Red Devil, taking midfield play to a glorious new level.
He, more than any other player of his day, the personification of the British style of play.
With his magnificent career on a downward arc, he was lured from Old Trafford to Essam Park.
Borough handed him a player-manager role, with promotion to the Premier League the stated goal.
A momentous inspired signing it proved to be and signalled the most eventful period in Borough's history.
With Borough treading water in danger of imminent stagnation, his arrival on Teesside sparked a wave of jubilant expectation.
Red Robbo and Borough were a perfect football fit, and with success-starved fans, he was an instant hit.
He seemed effortlessly into his dual role, and for Borough, the ball started to roll.
He swiftly turned the club's failing fortunes around and Borough finished the season as champions, Premiership bound.
On the crest of a wave, having turned the football tide, Borough moved to their new home at the Riverside.
What then ensued surpassed fans' wildest dreams as Robbo assembled a team bursting with talent at the seams.
A vibrant, exciting team in a constant state of flux, with an influx of cosmopolitan stars deluxe.
In recruitment, Robbo's reputation never fails to score, a magnet in attracting international players to Borough's door.
Borough's dressing room soon came to resemble a Football League of Nations ensemble.
From Australia, South America and Europe they came, drawn by the magic of Robbo's name.
Having gathered a squad packed with footballers fine, on his illustrious playing career, Robbo called time.
And at the ripe old footballing age of 39, confined his duties to the non-playing side of the touchline.
The man who had famously worn the number 7 then took Borough fans on a journey to seventh heaven.
Under Robbo, match days at the Riverside were an action-packed roller coaster ride.
He mixed his varied flavours in the Riverside melting pot and served up a football dash vibrant and hot dish.
Fans were treated to a style of football they had rarely seen and transported to football heights they had never been.
Three cup finals, two promotions and one unfair relegation. were a pen picture of Robbo's Borough transformation.
Along the way, he routinely international careers resurrected, his fledgling managerial career perfected, and faults corrected.
But for Robbo at Borough, there was no time added on. After six seasons, the red card was shown, and he was sadly gone.
And yet, after all of that, Jenny Bond would still say Steve McLaren is your favourite Borough manager as the most successful in history.
Well, it speaks for his record speaks for itself, doesn't it, Steve McLaren? Oh, did you notice? I actually tried to make it bigger because I thought Alex is going to make us read this, so I'll make the font bigger this time. And I made it too big, and I covered it up with photos and stuff. Well done on guessing a couple of the endings of those lines, Alex.
Well, I mean, I like to feel as though I get a sense of channeling the inner Jimmy Flynn spirit, really. Hopefully Jimmy appreciates that. Jenny, again, what did you make of that little epic? I mean, I feel it's almost, it makes the Homer's Odyssey mild by comparison, surely.
It does indeed, yes. I mean, if you chuck in the Iliad as well, they're about 50-50. But just the Odyssey, go for it.
Absolutely. George, again, your first experience there of the official piece of verse that's around. Just out of interest, I mean, Steve McLaren, we mentioned about that. How do you feel Borough's managers have rated over the years? I mean, obviously, Neil Warnock kind of in place now. We're grateful. I mean, he kind of offset that Portsmouth manager who obviously is deciding to actually do things with secret Woodgate, Agent Woodgate, as he's referred to by one of the contributors. Do you think that actually we've been fine? Was it a case of why Gary Monk? Just why? Or were there any other sort of areas where you sort of thought, yeah, well, absolutely. Maybe we should actually sort of put out a bid for, I don't know, that Tottenham manager who might be looking for a job before too long to do some moaning and things.
Oh, but I spent many years sitting in the air in the West Stand screaming why when Gordon Strachan and Tony Mowbray were no disrespect to Tony, obviously Borough legend, but it was I spent many years shouting why, watching poor after poor performance, wondering if we were ever going to, climb back to the glory that I sort of first witnessed. Ital Karanka was a fantastic appointment. As an infant, yeah. Ital Karanka was a fantastic appointment. Sort of, it was a bit like Steve McLaren, really. He was an assistant to a great manager. Sort of came into football management and did well. I thought he was probably one of the most productive managers that we've had in a long time. I think we could have done better than jumping to Gary Monk. I think there was
or Tony Pulis, perhaps.
Yeah, I thought he was a perfect manager. Many people don't like his style of play and often criticise it, but it's effective and it worked. And it was something that we needed because we have lacked creativity over years and years and years. And we're slowly starting to get that back with players like Yannick Bolasie and Cabano, even though they're both on loan. And people say, don't ever fall in love with a loan player. But players like that are fantastic. And I'm hoping that we'll be able to, push on now with Neil because he's done fantastically. People have often speculated about his age. Will he continue? Will he not? But obviously he's going to be with us next season. So I'm hoping maybe that this will be, obviously he's a man of many projects. I'm hoping that this will be his final project, will be to get us into the Premier League, and then we can get someone in who is tactically aware, who has good links with big clubs and has experience. And I'm hoping maybe somebody along the lines of maybe a big punt, but Marcelo Bielsa-esque manager will be able to do that.
Leeds United fans would love you for that.
my housemate's a Leeds fan. He's sat in the next room. I'm sure he's crying listening to me saying that.
I won't talk about Leeds and their recent results against Man City, but that's by the by. At least it sort of set us up for a good result against Borussia Dortmund. Moving on, Jenny, any thoughts that you'd like to raise with George about his cricketing expertise? Because he also does some interesting cricketing correspondence, which professionally you might need to find out about, or indeed questions for Robert. Over to you, Jenny.
Ooh, I I played cricket when I was a schoolgirl. I played for Essex once, but I don't know a huge amount about cricket nowadays. It seems that there seems so many different versions of it. It's only ever cricket when I played, and school games were one day games. So you get 5 day internationals, 1 day. Now you've got all kinds of stuff like 20-20, and we're not allowed to touch the ball, and let's all run in circles first. And I can't keep. Why do you think they're actually doing that, George? Are they trying to get people interested in cricket? In which case, why not just focus on the best possible format and make it a beautiful game?
I think it's quite a hard topic, really, to be honest. When you're looking at cricket, there obviously they say there are so many forms now. You've got the Test, which is 5 days. You've got regular county championship, which is 4 days. You've got 1 day T20. Now you've got the 100 as well. I think what they're trying to do is create short, quick paced games and games to get those who aren't necessarily interested in cricket interested and draw them into the game, a bit like franchise. A bit like what they're doing over in the Big Bash and what they're doing in the IPL and even the Pakistan Super League now, which is sort of really becoming prominent these days. But I think they're also leaving the longer game for almost, without sounding sort of ageist, I'm 23, but for the older generation.
23, my word, George. I mean, these are critical moments.
Yeah, but it's just for the older generation, I think. I mean, I'm a lover of all forms of cricket, so, and I know many people that are, but I think it's all about the draw and attraction. It's to get people involved. Especially at young age, there are people who just who want to be involved in cricket, but don't want to sit there for, you know, take time out of their day from 10 o'clock in the morning till 6 at night, or they don't want to...
5 days in a row, yeah.
Yeah, for 5 days in a row, or they don't want to go out on a Saturday and play from 12 o'clock to 8 o'clock. You know, they want to do other things. And in a fast-paced society, which we're now living in, I think they're modernising the game to come up with the times, but I also think that they're trying to not mess with the traditional roots that have been embedded over so many years.
Yep. Was it Alan Ramage, Rob, who was our keen sort of cricketer and footballer at one stage? I believe Alan Ramage.
Yeah, he played Yeah, that's right. He ended up going to Derby County, didn't he? A centre half, but yeah, he played county cricket and football. And obviously, once upon a time, there were many players that did that. Remember Chris Balderson for Carlisle, and he won the championship with Leicester. But yeah, it's pretty. For all the reasons George mentioned, I suppose it's very, very difficult to do that now. Yeah, the demands of all the different forms of cricket.
Britta Somalonga suddenly actually sort of working with the English Cricket Board, can you really? It's not going to necessarily be there, but you know, it could be interesting. Okay, and George, just a few credits for... Sorry, yes, Jenny.
Could I add one quick question for Rob?
Yeah.
It's a hard one.
Oh.
Rob, we're 9 points shy of the playoffs. Seriously, how do you rate our chances
next season, Jenny? Seriously, it's gone. There's no way. Even if we could win, we've obviously there's 5 games left. We need an awful lot of teams to lose all the games, so it's not going to happen. And we've just mentioned mentioned today that the press conference was that a couple of players, Tavernier and Dale Fry, are both really key players. The medics have said, look, you could risk playing them again this season, but it would be a risk. So Neil Warnock said, we're not going to take that risk. It's not worth it. And I think that's a signal, isn't it, that the season is finished as far as we're concerned, as far as he's concerned. So it's progress from last season, because obviously we nearly got relegated, but it's disappointing from where we were just a couple of months ago. We promised a few times, but you know, it's not the same, is it, without supporters? I thought that was really brought home at Easter. I think maybe was that last time we did one of these at Easter, and the Easter's like it's a big point, a big sort of high point in the season. But it was nothing without any supporters. It was just, you know, watching something on TV, 11 versus 11. It could be like a training match. And yeah, it's going to be, it's a strange time to get promoted this year, Jenny, when there's nobody there to actually watch it or to achieve anything, you know. So
we're just going to hold off so everybody can enjoy it then.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, let's just work our way through the whole process. Let's have predictions then. I think it might well be a case of Middlesbrough 2, Queen's Park Rangers 1 tomorrow. What's your prediction, George?
I'm going to be optimistic this week. I'm going to go for I'm going to go along the same lines as you, Alex. However, I think Coben's going to get a bit of game time, like Warnock said in his press conference. I think he'll actually do bits. I think he'll get a goal. I think he'll be 3-1.
Ooh, that'd be good.
Positive views, Jenny.
I'd love to see them beat QPR, but I think it's probably going to be 1-1 or 2-2.
And it's clear to say you're not a Millwall supporter. I did think erroneously that you indeed were a Millwall supporter, but obviously that is not the case, is it?
Never.
Just wanted to clarify that, that's all. And Rob, your thoughts?
Well, I looked up this morning and I put this to Neil Warnock that Middlesbrough versus QPR head-to-head record is we've won 18, we've drawn 17 and QPR have won 19. So I said, are we going to put that right? And he said, yes, we're going to put that right tomorrow. It's going to be 19, 17, 19 afterwards. We'll have won the same amount of games. And that's what we're going to do. And we're going to win 2-0.
And how can people actually get hold of the final edition for this month, or this season, of course, of Flying to the Moon, or indeed the back issues the folk who actually like the physicality of actually holding a copy of the Flying to the Moon fanzine in their hands? How can they actually do that?
Absolutely. If you go to the website fmttmborough.com and have a look, click on articles, and there's a fanzine shop where you can buy it, or go to the Facebook. We've got a Facebook page, FMTTM Facebook page, and I've put the link on there for the present fanzine. And I'll stick links all over that site now, I think, the website, after we've been on there. So I also go on Twitter, and I always put a link on there as well on the day before the match. So yes, I've got a few left over in the box here, Alex. So if people want to get in touch, and they can, I'll stick it in the post today, and then they can read it, accompany the match with the fanzine.
Exactly. It just works on so many wonderful ways. And of course, George, a little shout out to your dad, who I believe was very excited when you phoned him up to actually say literally an hour ago that his son was going to actually be on the Fly Me to the Moon podcast.
Yeah, he's absolutely over the moon. As soon as I told him, he was like, oh yeah, that's Rob Nichols, isn't it? Straight away.
Well, it wasn't going to be that's Alex Leftchuk, let's face it. I mean, it's never going to happen. Or indeed, that's Jenny Finch in this particular instance, because Jenny's got her own programme. But yeah, absolutely, it is that Rob Nichols.
No, good to hear. Say hello to your dad, and it's great to have you on board, George. I hope this is the first of many times you'll be on here. And I hope you'll be thinking about considering writing some articles for us as well.
Yeah, I'd absolutely love to.
Got to ask the question, Rob. Frank Worthington, was there really a chance that he could have actually been signed for Middlesbrough back in the day?
Well, it was the rumour in going back to when George was there in 1974. That was the rumours going around, but it might just have been a rumour. But he was just such a phenomenal entertainer, but a tremendous goal scorer as well. I remember my dad was working in the Midlands at that time, and he went to see Leicester City playing at Filbert Street, and they were sort of like the flair team of the era of that time, and which is weird, it's come round again, hasn't it, for Leicester? But Frank was just brilliant on the pitch, and he played for so many teams, but he even played for Sunderland, but he didn't ever come to Middlesbrough, and there was a feeling at that time when we got promoted under Jack Charlton, that we were one player short of winning the title. And we did actually finish seventh in our first season, and we just fell away at the end. We could have won the title that season. It was Derby County who got it in the end. But yeah, that was the rumour going around that we were trying to get Frank Worthington, and it would have been absolutely brilliant. Wow.
Not that I'm one for starting rumours, but I did suggest it the last time that if Barra are still in the Championship next season, given that he said he doesn't want to sign for another Premier club, Sergio Aguero is available. And you know, he might solve some of our striking problems. I mean, I was just, you know, Jaime Moreno is mentioned in this month's fanzine. So, you know, why not Sergio Aguero? South American connection. It's just out there.
We'll get to, if we have a whip round between the three of us, it's possible.
Yeah. Okay. So moving on, Rob, would you like to lead us in that final sort of segment that all the Fly Me to the Moons end with, even when we've actually had Brentford correspondents on over the season? Over to you, Rob. What do we actually need to say now? Those seven little words that are so significant.
Come on, Borough. And up the Borough.
After three. Three. Come on, Borough.
Come on, Borough.
Up the Borough.
Yeah, it doesn't quite have its sort of magic and zoom that we used to have when we had a full crowd, but never mind. We get there in the end.